inside the Crazy Ant Farm. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much. It's a sunny day here in California, which is very rare during the wintertime. So.
Oh, yes, the sun. I was so happy to see the sun. Logan, I saw you post earlier, too. It's been really rainy where we're at also, so it's like, hello, sunshine. It's nice to see you again.
Exactly.
Been...
Absolutely.
Fantastic. Well, listen, we are super excited to talk to you. We're huge Marvel geeks. We're all in on the MCU. We don't buy all the stuff. It's going down. It's poor. No, it's fine. It's going to be great. And so we're pumped. Echo, loved it. Wow, what an incredible show. What an incredible kickoff to the character, everything. So we're obviously super excited to talk to you about that. But, you know, you're a pretty talented gal, and you've been in some other stuff. And doing our research, your story about how you kind of got started and your influences and your upbringing, very interesting. So let's start there. Did you always know you wanted to be an actress? Did you kind of fall into it? What's the deal? How'd you know this is for me?
It was all my older sister's fault, of course, as it always is. There was a traveling theater that used to come through our hometown every summer, and my parents are teachers, so you know during the summer they have the summers off with us, but you need to find something for the kids to do because there was four of us just kind of running around, and so my mom put my sister in this traveling theater, and you audition for 2 days, you rehearse for 3 days, you perform for 2 days, and then they magically go off into the wilderness and come back next year. And so my sister did it 1 year, and I went, well, that's not fair. Like, she's getting flowers and everybody's clapping for her. Like, oh, I need to do that. So then I got put into it the next summer, and I was a mouse or a rat in the Pied Piper, whichever you think
that
they are.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, I was gray either way. And then it just kind of kicked off from there. There was a time in my life, second grade, I really wanted to be a paleontologist because my second grade teacher, Ms. Ramos, had she gave us chocolate chip cookies and a toothpick. And this was like the class activity. And it was, you have to get the chocolate chips out of the cookie without breaking them. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I'm a focus, like you put me to do something and I focus on that one thing. So there I was taking out all the chocolate chips. And I thought, this is great. I could do this forever. And then immediately went back into acting. I love it so much, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. I love that too. Cause I mean, there's so many different things I feel like, you know, you're exposed to when you're a child. I mean, you know, with your parents being teachers, maybe them trying to be like, hey, you could also take this sort of, you know, educational role or, you know, all these different things, because I know you also raise pigs. So that's very interesting. We'll talk about that a little bit later too. But I mean, what I really connect with is the family dynamic coming from a lot of siblings, especially when, and, you know, sometimes, you know, you want to follow your older siblings and sometimes you want to be completely different from them. Right. Mm-hmm. I had siblings that were very much into sports. I had siblings that were very much into like skateboarding and like punk rock band type of thing. So to be able to try to like navigate and kind of bob and weave in between, like kind of what everybody's doing, just so I can put my feet in just a little bit to see, you know, how I develop as a person myself. So did you kind of feel that way as well? Were you just kind of, it seems like you had a good relationship with your siblings. So did you kind of follow their lead or did you just kind of like, you know, try different things out?
Yeah. You know, older sisters are always going to influence you in one way or another. You're either going to follow what they do or you're going to do the exact opposite. And I think there's a lot of stuff that my sister started to do that I was like, wow, that seems so cool. And so I would try it out. And if it worked, it worked. And if it didn't, it didn't. And my parents have been coaches for my entire life, coaches and teachers. So I started playing soccer when I was four. And for a while, I thought, oh, my gosh, I'm going to be an Olympian. Like, this is what I'm going to do the rest of my life. And then basketball and volleyball and dance and I had a lot of stuff thrown at me, but I'm so thankful for that because I got into zero trouble.
Oh, for sure.
Maybe 1% trouble. I got into 1% trouble.
Just
a little bit. But you know, I always had not only my older sister kind of watching out for me, but then I was the second. So I was watching over two little ones also and trying to influence them. And if my sister, you know, my sister raised a pig, so then I wanted to raise a pig. And then my little brother raised rabbits instead of pigs. And then my little sister was like, I don't like any of that. I'm not into it. So, you
That's
know, we
so
all kind
funny.
Of influence what we do.
Wow. So the list of stuff you just like listed out. So it could not be better training to be an actor because, you know, I think the best actors pull from real life, stuff they've been through, things they've lived. And yeah, I mean, you've done just about everything. I feel like when you audition for a role, you're like, been there, done that. I can act that. I can do that. It's like you've literally done everything. I love the sports dynamic. My brother and I played sports together. He was 7 years younger than me. So he started off just really annoying, wanting to like always be around. And I'm like, just go away. But then as he got older and was old enough to actually hang around, we were inseparable. And I just, the whole dynamic changed. Yeah. And sports was our thing. So talk about sports, though, because I think in this industry where it is a tough industry, it's built on right? And it's hard. And networking and connecting and getting to people, I think sports is an excellent foreground for that, to learn how to build a teamwork and network and become, rely on each other to get where you're trying to go to be successful. I think that that lays really solid groundwork when you enter into this industry. Did you find that to be true? Because I think everybody should play sports at least once in their life just to try to, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think having a foundation of sports and my parents also being our coaches kind of growing up and even into high school, my dad was my varsity volleyball coach. Having that kind of foundation of, you know, it's my decision on whether I want to, you know, my dad's not going to wake me up at 6 a.m. to go practice. It's my decision. Do I want to wake up and get him up and say, Dad, can you take me to the field? Or, hey, can you go kick a ball with me in the backyard? Mom, can you help me, you know, do some volleyball drills or some basketball drills? Because both my parents were athletes. And so I think also something that I do a lot with when people ask me, you know, what the acting to sports relationship is, and kind of going to class for acting, I always relate it to a soccer game where if I haven't played a soccer game in 3 years and then you go, hey, go play a soccer game right now, I'm going to be a little rusty. I'm not going to be the worst person out there, but I'm definitely going to be a little rusty, maybe pull a muscle.
Right.
Same with acting, you know, going to class and always working. Our body is our instrument as actors. And same with going to class and kind of always working on that skill set, finding one skill, whether, you know, in soccer, it's dribbling, you know, dribbling and being really good at that, finding something in acting that you like, that you want to really hone in on for a little bit. If you don't practice and if you don't keep going to class and you don't keep working on your skill set and your body, you're going to be rusty. The next time you get an audition, you're going to go, oh, this, you know, I'm nervous again, or I feel like I did really bad. It will be, you're not doing anything, you know, you're not moving.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. That's very interesting too, because you're right. You have to keep flexing those muscles to make sure you stay trained, basically, to where you're staying prepared. And as an individual who, you know, loves the craft of acting, cinematography, and all the creative side, but also still being very, you know, involved in the exercise and being out there, because I mean, healthy body, healthy mind, and that goes hand in hand. We talk about that on our other podcast, which is mainly about mental health. But I'm curious, what was your favorite sport?
I always loved soccer. I really did. Sam was my idol. We actually all got a choice in my little sister's name, and what, you know, we were going to name her either Peekaboo after Peekaboo Street, who is also a track star. And then you got Mia after Mia Hamm, and we all loved soccer. We all played soccer. So it was like, oh, Mia, like her name has to be awesome. Mia.
Right. Exactly.
She's not into soccer. She didn't like the sun. So
that's hilarious. I love that. A little story time, I guess, just so you can get to know us a little bit more. Yeah. I also played soccer. Soccer and basketball were definitely my two favorite sports. I was way better at indoor soccer than I was outdoor soccer. I would play JV on the high school team, but I had a lot of really talented players on the varsity team. But I remember making my first goal for the JV, and I was like, I'm number one. But then in JV, like, I don't know. It was interesting too, because I had my hand in football a little bit too, and for high school and junior high, but I was never as aggressive in football that I was in soccer. It was so weird because I felt like I was being more aggressive in soccer when two people are battling for the ball and this person's behind me, I would throw my elbow and like it would get really aggressive sometimes. I'll admit that. But it's interesting too, because I didn't grow up in a space where, you know, the arts were really a thing as far as performing arts. So to be able to get into high school and what I all I've ever known was the sports mentality. But then getting into high school, being able to transition into being a thespian and getting on stage and being able to, you know, flex that creative muscle a little bit to obviously what molded into who I am now as a person. So talk about that a little bit from going from, you know, sports into theater. Was it something that was a challenge or was it different at all? Because I know my school in particular was very, you know, you were either one way or another. There was never really cross contamination, I guess you could say. I was really the only person that would do that. And they'd be like, what's theater like? And then I go over here and they'd be like, why are you playing sports? But I'm like, I love both. I don't know what to tell you. I love both. But I mean, did you have any of that, or was everybody just very kumbaya, rocking and rolling together?
No, yeah, no. My school was very much like yours, where, you know, they really wanted you to choose one thing and go for it. For me, going into it, going into school, I always played sports outside of our school leagues.
Okay.
I played like traveling teams. So growing up, it was, you know, you're going to school for 8 hours, staying for extracurriculars, you know, staying for whatever little plays or choir or guitar or folklorico dances or, you know, pick something. And then going to soccer practice after that and having, you know, soccer tournaments every Saturday. We were all in the field and we were there for hours because my sister would play, then I would play, then my brother would play, then my little sister would play for a little bit, and then we'd all sit in a tent and drink Kool-Aid. So, you know, going into it and trying to balance all of that, it never felt like a big deal to me. And so when I did get into high school, kind of junior and senior year, and people were going, well, you have to choose.
Right.
And I was like, why do I have to choose? I still have to raise my hand to go to the bathroom. You're telling me I have to choose what I want to do for the rest of my life right now?
Right.
Like, no way, man. I should be able to do whatever I want. So I did. I did both. I played sports and I raised pigs and I was an FCA and I did theater. I mean, I did so many things.
See, I'm a wee bit older than both of y'all. And I'm just going to tell you, that even back when I was in high school, it was still the same way. It has not made any kind of a thing. It was still a, what do you mean you play football and hockey, but you want to do this? It was like, and I was in ROTC too, so ROTC. So I was really weird.
Yeah, yeah.
They're like, wait, you play sports, you want to act, and you're like military? Like, what is wrong with you? Like, you. It hasn't changed all these years, you know, which is insane to me. I just feel like you should be able to, like you said, do whatever you want.
Yeah,
I think though for me, look, I was football and hockey were by far my favorite. I loved playing football and hockey. I was aggressive in both. I was a little bit rough. But swimming was where everybody wanted me to go. I was on the swim team, and for a long time, my coaches were trying to get me for the Olympic trials. I was really fast and really good.
Wow!
For a long time, they thought that was going to be my future. And I'm like, I don't want to do this. I don't want to go to the Olympics. And they're like, you don't want to go to the Olympics. You have a chance to go to the Olympics. And I'm like, I don't. I'm sorry. I appreciate it, but I don't want to. I'm like, you know.
Yeah.
So I understand that. The pressure of, like, you know, somebody else trying to tell you what your path is going to be. And so you've mentioned your parents several times. And the reason I brought that up about, like, people kind of like, you should do this, you should do this, you should do this, because, and I'm curious, because we talk all the time about having a support system in this industry and the right people around you and how critical that is. Because Logan and I still, to this day, we still hear from friends and in some cases even family about, get a real job. What do you, you know, you need to think about a real career. You're getting older and this and that. What are you doing still trying to play? But then, you know, when we made our directorial debut and we had our film debut and we had the big red carpet event, and they all want to show up on the red carpet. It's not
a real job,
but it's time to be on the red carpet kind of thing. So talk about that a little bit. Have you experienced that type of stuff about when you say, this is what I'm going to do? And they're like, oh, but what about a real job? Have you had to go through that?
Very much so. You know, whether it be culturally, whether it be, you know, family, whether it be our teachers, always going like, well, you need to have a plan B. Like, you really, no, but you should, that's great. That's so great. But you really should have a plan B. And my mom will say this till she's blue in the face. I remember her very, very prominently telling me, you know, I love that you're a dreamer and you want to do this and you've got big, big goals, but you need to have a plan B just in case. And I said, you know, it's advice. take it or leave it. But I very much so said, if I allow myself to have a plan B, that's allowing myself to fail at plan A.
Ooh.
That's telling myself it's okay if you fail because you've got something else. If you only have a plan A and that's the only thing you're going to go for, you won't let yourself fail. Mm. If it gets hard, you won't let yourself stop because there's nothing else. You've got nothing else to go on.
Yeah.
You know, that's something I believed with all my heart. And it's, you know, I get it. The security of money and insurance and all the things that, you know, but also if you get to a point in your career that all that stuff is there, all that stuff is coming, you know, it yep. just takes a little bit of time and patience, which is what parents teach you all the time, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, oof. Most definitely. I mean, we say all the time, you know, the difference between the people who make it and the people who don't are the people who just give up. Those, the ones who don't continue moving forward
yep.
are the ones who don't get to inevitably where they want to be. Like, yes, this is a very slow burn of an industry. And we try to tell people that because this podcast is, you know, for the up and comers trying to break into the entertainment industry, and everybody's trajectory is different. And so you have to be prepared for that. You can't compare yourself to anyone else who may be around the same age or even starts off the same time as you. Because, you know, different people have different opportunities that present themselves in their own lives and their own paths. So it's very hard to try to, you know, stay on the straight and narrow and just stay tunnel vision, thinking about your own path, right? So to be yeah. able to do that and continue moving forward, we always say this industry is an industry full of selection and not rejection. So to be able to keep saying that to yourself, because at the end of the day, that's all that matters, talking to yourself and if you believe in yourself. So did you ever have any of that on your journey? Did you ever have a little bit like, okay, what am I doing? And if you did, what put you back on the right path?
Yeah, I mean, there was a point where I had signed a contract and then the pandemic happened, and that was
right. Oh yeah.
That was like, okay, what do we do? Not only in mm-hmm. acting, but what do we do in life now? Like, yeah. how do you figure out who you are without this thing that you're not going to be doing for a while? You don't know how long it's going to go. And I think even before that, there were times where I would, you know, maybe sign a TV contract and wait and wait and wait. And you get that no, and you're like, are you kidding? Like, we're so close. And it's funny that you say, you know, it is kind of a slow burn, kind of a waiting game. And it really is, you know, I've had so many people tell me, like, you know, you're getting older in this industry, which I'm like, first of all, whoa.
Hold on.
Okay.
That's right.
Thanks for your opinion. Didn't ask for it. But you're getting older in this industry. And, you know, the longer you continue this career, more people are going to just drop off because they're not making it. So it's going to give you more of an opportunity. And that's wonderful. But that's also so sad for those dreamers who aren't able to, you know, put their foot down or whatever, for whatever reason, financially aren't able to continue this journey in their dream. And it makes me sad to think that, you know, somebody's going to be out there going like, I really wanted to be an actor. I really, yeah. that's really what I wanted to do with my life. So as lovely as it is to, you know, continue this, I do think about the people who, you know, have to give up for whatever reason or choosing, you know, something else that they don't love, because I would hate to be in a job that I don't love for the rest of my life.
Exactly.
And it really is that mentality of going like, do you really want to be doing something you hate for the rest of your life? Or
right.
not even something mm-hmm. that you hate, just something that isn't inspiring to you, that you get up and you go, oh, I have to go to work today. It's like, oh my goodness, I am so blessed to get to go to a job today. I get to go to set. I don't care how early it is. I don't care what I'm going to be doing. I'm so happy and so lucky to be able to do what I do. Play in a sandbox all day. Yes, I'm there. Pick me up. I'm there.
I love everything about that. And you know, another thing that we talk about too is it not just the people that quit or can't follow through or for whatever, but the people who get into it for the wrong reason. The people who get into it because they want to be famous or rich, and not because they love the craft, not because they want to be an artist or a creative. And I feel like that if you're entering into it for that, you're never going to succeed, because yeah. it will never come if that's what you're trying for. It comes when you're not trying for that. I always tell people, it comes because you're working hard and you're passionate and you love what you do, and that's going to get you to that. But and so doing the research on you and everything, I know that you one of the very first things that you did was a Hunger Games movie, like a background actor. And mm-hmm. I think that's so critically important because I know people that like, I don't want to just be a background actor. I don't want a walk-on part that doesn't speak. And I'm like, get on a set. Just get on a set. That's how somebody sees you. It doesn't matter if you say a damn word. If somebody sees you, that might be your break. You know, you have that conversation. So I always admire people who are willing to be like, I don't care what they tell me. If they offer it to me, I'm going. I don't care if I'm sitting there for 18 hours and I don't say a word. I'm going to go. I'm going to sit on that set and I'm going to be happy that I'm there. So I loved that you said that. And the one thing that stuck out when you said it is like, you saw the crane and you saw the green screen and you're like, oh yeah, no, this is it. Talk about that because we talk about this all the time. And for me, I say it and people think I'm nuts, but I always say, other than the birth of my daughter, I have yet to find anything that matches the feeling of when I'm on set. It's just like the most incredible thing, and it's different every time, so it makes it even more amazing, you know. And talk about that, because I imagine, so when you're on a big thing like that, even as a background actor, you're going, oh, this is it.
I mean, so wild. The fact that sometimes we even have to stop shooting and everybody would have to go hide under these big pillars because the paparazzi was coming over in a helicopter and they didn't want anybody to see our outfits and what we were doing. And so there you were. And then they'd be like, hurry, 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 go. Yeah. And I think the journey from being a background actor in Georgia on the Hunger Games to being who I am in the Marvel universe in Georgia on a set again, just that journey and being on those sets in different capacities, I still felt like every team member, every person on there was so welcoming. I think the biggest trouble or the biggest, you know, maybe confrontation you'll find or the biggest rifts you'll kind of find are with the actors themselves. Yeah. With the background actors going like, well, I did this. And you're like, you're all here, man.
Right.
That's right.
Like, you know, some people are there for a check and that's great. And some people are there like me, you know, I just wanted to be on set. I just wanted to know that I could do this and I could be a part of this industry. And what is even more wild that I don't think I've told anybody except for my family, on the Hunger Games, we had Cody Williams. He was I believe he was an AD on that job. And then Tim Fitzgerald also, I think, believe he was second AD on that job. Mm-hmm. And I met them on the set of The Hunger Games. You know, I was a background actor and I'm very much like, I try to talk to everybody, try to make people remember my name. You know, you have to network. And even then I was like, oh yeah, you know, this is what I do. No, I really want to be here. And, you know, anything they could push me in the front, I would try and get in. And I remember booking Marvel, getting a call, and I saw the name Cody Williams and I kind of thought, yeah, whatever, right? You know, you're not doing it. And then I get off the plane, they take me straight to set, and Cody Williams standing right in front of me.
And I
went, Cody? And he goes, wait, you're like Danny? And I was like, it's like,
yeah. That's
so crazy.
Oh my God. I was going to say, and I bet he remembered you. And that is why you're on a Marvel show, because you just wanted to be on set. You just wanted to live the experience, and you were smart enough to talk. It's all about talking. It's, hi, I'm such and such. Why are you doing that? Why do you use that light? What is the setup over here? Because people remember you.
Hey, what time's lunch?
Yeah, like, exactly. Exactly.
Honestly, don't believe the rumor of don't talk to them unless they talk to you. Oh my goodness, that was so intimidating when I was on that set. And it really was just look, you know, not even talking to people, sometimes just making eye contact and then going, hey, how are you? And then, hey, you know, take that opportunity. Don't just go like, oh, I'm good, thank you. You know, don't be nervous. There are people just like you. Mind you, I get off the plane, I see Cody Williams and we're going, oh my God, you were on. And yeah. Oh my gosh. Okay. You know, I'm in Atlanta, outside of Atlanta, Georgia for a while. You know, waiting to shoot, and hey, you've got equestrian training. You got a meeting with the prop master. Perfect. Great. Meeting with the prop master goes well. They take us out to a field. We've got, you know, training for horseback riding. I get out of the car. I'm putting my own boots on, because I brought my own boots, of course.
Right.
Put my boots on and I look up and somebody's like this, and he turns around and he has a mask on, And it's Tim Fitzgerald.
Oh my gosh.
Going, Danny? And I went, Tim? And we have a picture together from like the Hunger, you know, like,
yeah.
It was so, and they both, it was so nice for my first project and this project to have been linked in that way, and for, and to talk to both of them and going like, they were both so proud of me and I was so proud to be working with them again. And I automatically felt safe. I knew that I'd be taken care of. You know, I felt like I had a friend. I felt like I had someone on that set. And it kind of rolls that way when you meet other background actors who you get to work on other projects with, or stunt guys, you know, always be their friends. They're always going to protect you. You know, I'll just kind of making those connections, and don't be afraid to network on those sets, because 7 years down the line, you could be, you know, actually the one in front of the camera doing your thing, and those
Yes.
people could be there for you.
Yes.
Oh, I love that so much for you, because yeah, it is such a positive experience, right? When you are able to find a familiar face, especially on a huge Marvel set, which, you know, this is supposed to be like a couple years ago, 5 years ago, I would say at least. I mean, it was the pinnacle of the entertainment industry. And right now, you know, I mean, a lot of mixed reviews about everything. So I'm sure they're trying to get everything as perfect as possible for the fans, and to be able to have such a good experience on such a high quality, like well-oiled machine that is the sandbox of Marvel.
Yeah.
I feel like is something so freaking special. And we used to talk to people from Marvel from like the original Captain Marvel days and like way back when, and we know that they used to be very hush hush, very secretive about a lot of things. Are they still like that? Like when you sent in your audition for your sides, were things not the same from when you actually got on set?
The material was very similar, but I actually didn't know I was auditioning for Marvel
Yep,
until
there
I
it
got the
is.
job. Other than that, and it's funny because you're normally going through your team for auditions.
Exactly. Yep.
And for this one, my team said, here's an NDA. We won't talk to you after this. And I went,
oh, wow. Wow. Yeah.
And I only went through casting, only went through casting. That's, you know, I knew, you know, whatever it was going to be really cool and pretty secretive.
Right.
But never in the back of my mind was I like, oh, this is Marvel. Like, oh, mm-hmm. of course it is.
You know.
Well,
but it also,
yeah,
I genuinely felt like I had, I was so much more comfortable doing the audition, not knowing what it was.
Ooh,
and,
good point.
And not knowing so much about the story and blah, blah, blah. It was just like, here's a person, here's three keywords. This is what she's like. Give us what you got.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, cool. There's no fluff to get in the way. I'm not stressing over anything. I'm just like doing this thing. Okay, cool.
Okay, so now we gotta throw it out there, because everybody's listening, like, wait, they keep talking about Marvel and she said like equestrian training and like what she's riding a horse? Like what's going on? Echo, you're in Echo, right? And so all of us geeks know they kind of changed up Echo's powers and origins of her powers, and they're diving mm-hmm. deep into the indigenous and spiritual side, and that's where the powers come from. And you're one of the ancestors that gives her the powers. You're Tuklo, and I think you're the one who kind of gives her the badass fighting stuff, right? Because yeah, I mean, you know, yeah, you're with the gun and you're throwing the knife, and like, you know, you're the badass that she's kicking people's asses because of.
Yeah.
You're that ancestor. Which is awesome. I mean, talk about this whole experience. We've heard nothing but great things about this set, about how everybody learned sign language to be able to communicate with Alakwa. And just that says, wow, what a community. What a set that I'm coming into to work on right there. But talk about the indigenous representation, the hard of hearing community. You're talking about an amputee. To be able to come onto a project that is representing all of these different things, and in a way that they were so authentic. I mean, I'm watching the Indian and the indigenous background and the spiritual stuff, and you can tell that they took great pride and detail of getting that right. Like, we're just not going to put out the kind of. They wanted to make sure that that's not what it was. That this is this.
Yeah.
And so talk about the experience of that and what it was like working on a set where that was so important, and the representation that you're giving. Your story is so beyond inspiring already. I can only imagine people listening to this interview are going to be inspired by you to want to chase the dream. But then to be on a project where they see this and they realize maybe they're not perfect, maybe they do have something wrong, but they can do it anyway, because look at the people in the show and they're doing it. So what does that feel like to be involved with something like so amazing like that?
Yeah, I amazing. There's just so much good energy around it, and to be on a project that shows the disabled community. My brother's disabled, so that was very close to my
Oh,
heart.
see.
And then to show the indigenous community, and I know we highlight just the Choctaw culture, but to be of mixed race and to be able to highlight that part of me and kind of explore that part of myself that I didn't get growing up as much as, other people did. To see something different on screen and to see a different story being told, not just the reboot of whatever, or
Right.
the same people, the same actor in three movies in the same year, and you're just like, come on, I want to see something different. This is that show. And
Yes.
then to have it, to learn ASL and to kind of have that experience and wanting to kind of pursue that more and teaching my parents, hey, if you meet anybody at the carpet, this is how you say hi and this is how you spell your name, and getting them into
Love
it
that.
was so cool and so amazing. It's a project that's really, really close to my heart. And actually, my dad used to collect comic books before we were all born. And then at one point he said, you got to choose between diapers and comic books.
Amen, sister. I know
Yeah,
that
so comic books kind of went away, and when I was filming my last scenes on set, one of our medics actually came up with the Phoenix Song comic books that Echo appears in,
Yeah.
and he said, I know we've got a lot of ancestors coming in and out of the show that we've added in, but he's like, I don't know if you know this, and he opened the comic book and he goes, you're the ancestor who's in the actual comic book. Like, you are a comic book character, which I was like, there's no way. And then he gifted it to me, so it's on my fireplace over there. But getting to bring that home and show my dad, and then going to the local comic book store that he hadn't been to in like 30 years, and of course that he was going like, I need this comic. And the guy was like, oh, what brings you in for this? And he was like, I can't say, but I really need it.
Feige
It
will
was so
kill me, but
amazing. Yeah.
yeah,
He bought out all of the copies they had of that, and he just, it felt so good to bring something back home, but also just highlight so many different communities. It's so important to see yourself on screen, see stories that are important to you on screen. I feel like we don't have enough out there in this industry.
Yeah.
Not enough new, authentic, original stories are being told. The fantasy and all that's so wonderful, but to see yourself on screen, to see your story told, and maybe a solution to your story that you haven't even thought about yourself, could help so many people. And I think it's so important. And I'm so happy Marvel like stuck their neck out and did this, because it makes so much sense in this time.
Yes, most definitely. And we talk about all the time, the best form of education is through entertainment, we believe. So to be able to tell these different type of stories, yes, obviously everybody can see we are white men, so we know where our
Wait,
ancestors come from, but
what?
we don't know anything
What?
else. So I mean, obviously,
You sure?
I don't know,
but
man.
it's one of those things where, people have to be open to learning these type of things because there's so much more world and culture out there than just your own. Like I really enjoyed Killers of the Flower Moon and learning everything about that story and how settlers just came in and basically just completely took over their land and manipulated them and ended up murdering off all of these families. And it
Absolutely.
was such a crazy story to be able to, like, how is this allowed? How is this able to exist? Like, to look at it now and to look back on it, it's absolutely insane. And that's why I said educational purposes, so that we don't have history repeating history. So to be able to continue moving forward and do the right things and not be like those pretentious assholes. Even though I love Leonardo DiCaprio and Martin Scorsese, it's fine. It's fine.
Of which we were called, by the way. We are our first film. It dealt with a lesbian couple who were biracial, and the amount of people that came at us about who do you guys think you are to tell this story? How can you possibly know? Or we were called all kinds of things. We were for supporting the gay community or for supporting an interracial person and blah blah blah. I mean, we were like, whoa, like, hold on. We're just trying to tell a story and we're trying to make it real and we're keeping it like, because this is real. The script that we got, it was the typical white guy, male shooter, and the girl, white girlfriend, and blah, blah, blah. And we were like, this isn't real. This happens, but there's so much more in life that's going on. We need to talk about that. And so, but yeah, as two white guys, that we were hammered from all different directions going. But I think the thing that we showed and that we won a lot of people over with is that we are educated and we did take the time to learn things that we didn't know. And we wanted to represent it the right way. And if we didn't know something, we said, well, we've never experienced that. So talk about what that's like, because we can't. We don't know. And so...
That's really all it takes, you know. It just takes the comfortability or even the nervousness to just go, hey, I don't know about this, but I really want to tell a story. Can I get people involved who do know about this, who have lived through this, or who know something about it? And that's where, you know, it comes in with having writers in the room who are deaf, who are Indigenous, who come from different cultures, having, you know, cameramen, you know, having an Indigenous culture coordinator, Pishon Bread, she was on with us every single day, you know, to have that level of importance and show that level of respect to the communities was super important. And people, you know, some people go about it the wrong way. And Marvel definitely stepped up and said, it's so important to have Indigenous directors, to have Indigenous writers, you know, to have all of the areas represented so that we have accurate representation and accurate words and accurate actions.
Well, you said the word authenticity. It was authentic for that very reason. So.
Yeah, completely agree. Completely agree. Well, something new, like we've been talking about before.
Oh, here they come.
In the pre-interview, we have the popcorn questions, and we'll do a quick three for you. Quick three.
Okay.
I'm very excited for these because you're an amazing individual. Just from this, you know, 30-plus minute conversation, I can already tell. Like, I feel like these will be fun.
Oh yeah.
What was the funniest moment or most memorable moment on the Echo set?
Oh man. The rabbit stick, throwing the rabbit stick. Mm-hmm. I got maybe like 10 throws with Keith Campbell, who was my stunt coordinator on that, teaching me how to throw this rabbit stick. So I got 10 throws off to the side, and then they were like, we're going to do it. And I said,
oh, goodness.
So the first two throws went really well. I actually like almost hit it, and it was like, oh, perfect. Great. Awesome. The third throw, I don't know what happened. I don't know if mid-throw I just forgot what I was doing, but I threw it and I almost hit the Disney rep who was on set that day. And I was like, I'm so sorry.
Oh my goodness.
They were like, oh. And they jumped and I went, I'm really okay. Are we done with that?
Oh, that's boy.
So funny. I'm so sorry. Yeah,
Mickey's right. Back in the place going, oh, boy, she's dangerous.
Yeah.
Like, uh-oh.
Yeah.
Oh. So that was really you, though. That's awesome. Was it like CGI? Did you go like this and then they did the thing CGI or whatever? That was really you.
That was really me. I was me. I was throwing it. I was doing a lot of things.
Wow.
Whether it flew the right way or not. Neither here nor there. That's a different.
You're even more badass now. That's awesome. I love that. Okay. These last two, we're going to get deep. I know which one he's going to ask you. So I'm going to ask you this one. And here we come with that. Okay. Ooh, let's contemplate and think. If you could go back in time and tell your 10-year-old self something, what would you say to her?
Oh my gosh. I'd say you're going to be fine. You're gonna be fine. You're an overthinker, kid. You really need to calm down. An overthinker, but you are gonna be just fine.
I love that. Yeah.
Yeah, she needs to know that she was gonna be so fine. Just so fine.
That's good. That's good advice.
Letting go, I feel like, a lot of things. You know, just to be able to have that release and to be able to just actually breathe. Turn the weight into air. Like,
turn your weight into wings and just fly away.
There you go.
Let it happen. And I mean, it transitions into the final question. So far, are you happy with your career?
Absolutely. You set a timeline in your head for who you know, where you want to be at a certain age, because this industry tells you that, you know, at a certain age, you're elderly, you're geriatric already, and no one's going to cast you as a teenager. You're going to go from teenager to grandma really quickly, and it really freaks you out. But I'm so thankful for how my career has progressed and where it's gone and where it's going. And I couldn't have done any of that without my parents and my family also telling me, like, hey, relax. All of it's out of your control. You know, you have control over one thing. After you say your last line, you can't do anything else. It's all up to those people. So I'm so thankful for where I am. And I'm so happy. I'm so happy.
Oh, my goodness. Listen, I got news for you, too. When the inevitable age out of stuff starts to happen, which, I don't know, has anybody seen Ellen Burstyn on Law & Order? For Christ's sake, she's still going. It's fine. Aging out thing. True. But I got to tell you, just through this conversation and seeing the passion in your eyes and the way you light up when you talk about things, and you're a very animated kind of behind – I see a huge career behind the camera for you. I really do. I think you would be a phenomenal director. You get the importance of being on set. You get the importance of actors communicating with below the line people. And plus, you could just tell that you're a storyteller. The way you described how everything was in your life and how it was on set and how you approach things, you're a storyteller. So I think you're going to be just fine whenever you decide to not be in front of the camera. You're going to be okay. I'm just telling you right now. This has been.
I could definitely do that. The plan is I've got a plan in my head for what my first feature would be, but we'll see.
I love that. See, already thinking ahead. Listen, you are an absolute gem. We could not thank you more for coming on and talking to us. This has just been an outstanding conversation, and man, wow! Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you guys so much. It's been so fun and I felt so comfortable, which is kind of, you know, sometimes you feel like you have to be here with everything, but I felt so comfortable. Like I've known you guys forever.
That means everything
well, good.
To
That's
us.
Good. Yeah,
it really
does. We are like, you know, loosey goosey, just letting it all happen. Yeah. That's what we're here for, just to make it a safe environment to where like we bring people on to give you a platform. Like, we're not a TMZ type of thing. We just want you to have a space where people can get to know you more and get that, you know, connectability to where, you know, we can help lift you up, because everybody who we've come across with the podcast has been amazing. But, you know, it's all about social media now. So where can people find you and follow you?
I'm an old lady. I'm just on Instagram. Just my name, Danny McCallum. That's it.
All right. Well, after that, that's easy enough,
we'll direct
right?
Everybody, yeah.
That's
we'll
right.
Direct everybody your way. Everybody, be sure to watch Echo right now on Disney Plus. All episodes are available. And Danny, thank you again so much. You are amazing. And open invite. Anytime you want to come back on, please feel free.
Aww.
We have a mental health podcast as well, if you want to come on there and dive Aww. Deep into your feelings, because I know we do every bi-weekly.
Well, I've had so much to process now that I found out I'm a white guy. I've been it's living so my life as a scam the whole time, Logan. Thanks for clearing it. Just what are we doing? Oh, my goodness. So yeah. Well, listen, take care. Have a great rest of the evening. And like Logan said, we'll keep in touch and open invite and just continued success. I think you're just going to be huge and we could not be more happy for you.
Oh, thank you guys so much. Thank you so much. And everything, all good things to you, all good vibes. Cool. Everything you deserve is coming your way.
Oh, well, thank you so much.
Thank you. Yes. Listen, take care and we'll be talking to you soon.
All right. See you later.
Bye. Oh boy, what? Talk about a great conversation, man. Like I said, or like we've said, since the beginning of 2024, our interviews have been top notch.
Oh my gosh. And the one theme that's running through all of these guests is that infectious smile and just that passion and enthusiasm that they have. If there was ever a way to start off a year inspiring people, these guests have been amazing. She was just another one that was just full of energy and life. I mean, what a great interview. What a great interview.
Yeah, completely agree. Completely agree. Like we said, be sure to check out Echo on Disney Plus. All available episodes are up now. They dropped all of those. That was one of the first ever Marvel shows that have done that. So that's really cool. And she plays a pivotal role, guys. It plays a pivotal role. So be sure to check it out. But thank you again, Danny, for coming on the show.